Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Denny Griffin here, and welcome to Meet the Author. If anyone listening has a question today for me or my guest, you can reach us at 646-478-0982. That's 646-478-0982. And also, if you're logged on to the Blog Talk Radio site, to my profile page, you'll see a chat option above my profile picture, and you can text a message to me, for me or for my guest, and we'll get your question answered for you. Today I have a special guest, as I say special in that I've known the guest for quite some time, and his name is Ralph Christopher. He's a 1982 graduate of the Musicians Institute of Technology in Hollywood, California, and has over 30 years as a performer and recording artist. However, his books, and he has two out now, are about the Vietnam War, and he's a combat veteran from Vietnam. His first book was River Rats, published in March 2005, and it's the true story of his time with Task Force 116, River Patrol Forces of Vietnam. In his latest book, Duty, Honor, Sacrifice, was released in September of 2007. Ralph, welcome to Meet the Author.
Thank you, Denny. Nice to be here.
And we're glad to have you. What I'd like to do, if you would for us, if you could tell the listeners a little bit, maybe expand on your background if you'd like, and also about your books and why you decided to write them.
I'd be happy to. Well, I was one of those sandy-haired, blue-eyed, 17-year-old kids from Virginia that in 1967 answered the call, which went out to us from John Kennedy and people that were saying, stop communist aggression. As you know, you're my age, the big fear after World War II with the communists. So I went off. I served 4 years. I did 4 trips to Vietnam, and on my last tour, I had the honor of serving with the Black Beret, which was the River Patrol Force. Through the years, I guess you know, Vietnam was a really tough war, and it divided our country in many ways. And through the years, I had seen and read other books, and of course, Hollywood's version, which wasn't quite the way I remembered it. So I tracked down my commanding officer and the guys on my boat and the people. And after writing Oliver Stone a long letter and assuring him that his portrayal of us in his movie was not accurate, I decided I was going to have to do this myself. And I went back to school, signed up with Bob Cawley, and met you and Keith Bittinger and a lot of the other writers in the area. And y'all all encouraged me. And I thought, well, you know, I didn't graduate high school. I'm a Southerner. I can't speak correctly, but I'm going to write a book, which was kind of funny to me. But it came out very well and stunned me, actually. I didn't really write it to my Vietnam brothers. I wrote it to their families and their children and grandchildren because I felt that somebody needed to record an accurate view. And again, we were pretty much shamed by the media and Hollywood. So this was something that I thought was like trying to return the honor to the men that I knew, and they fought brilliantly. They were, you know, really good guys. We were feeding the children. My doctor was delivering babies. But yet when I came home, the image of us was so far off that it upset us, to be quite honest. And for years and years, it did this. And then finally, some of us, we're all, you know, getting in the twilight now and felt that it was important to try to record some of these stories. Like I said, River Rats, the first book, is actually my story, and you follow me. And I wanted to give you a deck plate view, so I actually put you on the boat and take you in the jungle and you're there witnessing, you know, what my friends and I experienced, and it was pretty severe. We were playing the communists as a game. We became guerrilla warfare, and we were hiding in the bushes in little boats waiting for them to come down the Ho Chi Minh Trail and try to get by us. And it was, you know, some days they won, some days we won. But for the most part, Operation Sea Lords was a complete success. We turned them back, and in May of 1970, we attacked them in Cambodia, and they ran. So, again, this was something that I didn't think ever got out to the public that nobody really knew. My letters from my mom are there, my actual letters. So, you know, you're hearing a 17, 18-year-old kid saying, send me tuna fish and socks. And, you know, it's all just simple stuff. It's not all heavy, heavy war. You know, a lot of it's just a real lonely guy asking, begging for mom to send some, you know, some food, you know, just typical things, really, you know. But I do record over 100 river rats that were killed in 1970, and I tell how many of them were lost. And these guys are all warriors and heroes. And, again, this is another one of the reasons for the book is we should look back and remember the sacrifices made by these men.
So it would be safe to say then at least one of your primary objectives or motives for getting into to writing the history was to set the record straight because you felt there were some inaccuracies out there. And your audience, as you were doing it anyway, you were thinking about, if not your fellow veterans, at least the families of those veterans, so there would be an accurate history preserved.
That's absolutely right. I felt that as confusing as it was for us, that it must have been way more confusing for them. And when I wrote Oliver Stone, he had us going down a river passing a marijuana cigarette back and forth, and I assured him we could not do that. Now, again, my unit lost over 500 men, so if you were a family member and you see us going down a river getting high, what would you think? We were irresponsible, right? Well, we were the Black Beret. We humped Sear with the seals and went to Pendleton for small arms, and we're a very dedicated bunch. And I just, you know, the Hollywood version of us were a bunch of guys partying, and it just wasn't accurate. So, and I'm, you know, I'll be safe. I think I'm safe to say that many of the veterans of Vietnam felt that way, that the depictions of us were incorrect, not accurate.
Ralph, let me just interrupt you here a second. Something just crossed my mind that this might be a good time for you to clarify for me and for anyone listening. I don't want this to turn into a political discussion. That's not what it's going to be. However, because there's a political campaign going on right now for the next president, I can't help but think back 4 years to when John Kerry, Senator Kerry, was a candidate. And there was quite an issue made of some of the comments he made about the Vietnam veterans and his service. There was controversy about that. Now, he served on what I believe were called the Swift Boats.
That's correct.
How did the Swift Boats, were they the same thing you were on, or is there a difference we should know about?
Well, yeah, actually the Navy War, which is what I'm writing about, was divided in three sections. Task Force 115 were the Coastal Surveillance Force, and their job was to cut off the ocean entrance to Vietnam for the communists. And they were coming down in trawlers trying to ship arms in from the coast. And these guys did a wonderful job. They were warriors. I'll be honest with you. John Curry was a heavily decorated guy, but he was a Navy reservist. He wasn't a, you know, regular Navy. He was a two-year guy. And in many ways, he sort of shamed or he embarrassed his people. If he had just come home and done his time and come home, he probably would have been one of the most decorated guys in his unit. But by coming home and protesting and throwing his medals, I think that's where he really made his mistake. Who are we voting for? Were we voting for John Kerry, the Vietnam veteran? Or were we voting for John Kerry, the protester? So he had a split thing going on then, and I think it confused many of the veterans. And I was in Task Force 116, which was the River Patrol Force, and we were inland all the way up on the Cambodian border, 80 miles in on little canals. And like I said, the Swiftboat guys are our brothers. We love them. They're a good bunch. Whether you like John or not, their unit did a wonderful job and succeeded. The third group was Task Force 117, the Mobile Riverine Force. And whenever we ran into a company or a battalion of Viet Cong, two boats and 10 guys didn't fare well. So the Mobile Riverine would come in with 25 heavy tank boats, and the doors would come down, very much like Normandy and Iwo Jima. And 800 guys would go running up in the jungle chasing down the Viet Cong. So they fought battalion-sized forces. And the 9th Infantry, in particular the 2nd Brigade, were the men that did this. Highly decorated, again, warriors. All three of the Naval Task Force, including the 9th Infantry River Raiders, were great fighters and highly motivated people. And the image of us being all draft and not involved or not serious is not true. We fought for the man on the left and the man on the right. Forget what was going on in Washington. We didn't even pay attention. We were too concerned with getting through from day to day.
I was going to say you had other things on your mind besides Capitol Hill.
Yeah, and I did not know John Kerry back in those days, and I, still do not know him. It's a little irritating to us when you tell somebody you're a river rat and the first thing comes out of their mouth is, did you know John Kerry? I don't mean any disrespect to the man, but, there was quite a few of us over there, and for me to have known John Kerry would have been small,
yeah.
Very small chance since we were not in the same...
I'm sure
being a police officer, you've had to deal with these comparisons.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Okay, so River Rats, the first book was primarily your story and followed your experiences in Vietnam. Can you tell us a little bit about your most recent book, Duty, Honor, Sacrifice?
Well, now, in Duty, Honor, Sacrifice, so many of the veterans read my first book, I had a stack of letters thanking me. I mean, what is that term, priceless? Dear Mr. Christopher, my father was in Vietnam. He couldn't talk about it. Thanks for your book. I think
Ralph,
I understand.
Ralph, can you hold on to thought for just a second? We got a caller here. Let me see if there's a question. Hold on. Good morning, caller. Hello? Hello? Well, I don't know. We have a number lit up here. It's 702 area code, but no one's responding, Ralph. So why don't you go ahead and continue about duty, honor, sacrifice.
So anyway, a lot of my buddies, my veteran buddies, and when I say that, I don't mean one group. I'm a board member of Game Wardens of Vietnam. We're the oldest veteran group formed in 68. Our website is www.tf116.org. And over 1,000 river rats. And they all read the first book and loved it and kept saying, keep going, keep going. So the second book was actually dedicated to them. And again, in both books, I had many advisors. The men's names, for the most part, are all real. Their stories come from them. We work on them together to try to produce real stories. And in this one, I also explored the MRF. And it's almost a Navy Vietnam history book, much bigger, 430 pages, maps, pictures. And some of the men that served with me over there were real warriors and heroes, and nobody ever said thanks. They never heard their stories. So I went into that, and then I was floored by the 9th Infantry, 2nd Brigade. Bill Reynolds, who has his own website, the 9th Infantry, was instrumental. I had General Bullock, General Crocker, and about 20 of the men from that unit, not to mention the Mobile River Navy guys, and I had the swift boats, and it was just a much bigger undertaking.
Our caller seems to be back. Let me try it one more time, see if we can get there connected. Hold on just a minute.
Okay.
Hello, caller.
Good morning. Do you have me this time?
I gotcha. How are you this morning?
Well, even though I have a Las Vegas area code on this phone, I'm calling from Juneau, Alaska.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. You're long distance.
I'm long distance. I would like to welcome Mr. Christopher home. The Brownwater guys were fantastic. I was in the Seawolves. I was on Det 1 and Sea Float and served as a door gunner with Seawolves, so I'm very aware of how the riverboats functioned and the dedication of the men. They were fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You must know my friend Art Schmidt then, your commander.
Absolutely, I know Art Schmidt. He was my commanding officer. He arrived at Sea Float in May of 1970, and I got there the first week of June of 1970.
Well, Art's got 4 books out now. They're all doing very well, and I'm we stay in touch regularly. First of all, I'd like to say that for the listeners, the Seawolf gunships were assigned to Task Force 116. They're Black Beret. There was only 9 detachments, and their job was to rescue us. So they're our heroes. America might not know of them, but I assure you the river sailors are very aware of them. And there was always a bit of comfort afforded to us, because when we were out there in the middle of nowhere in little boats and the enemy came out, they knew that they had to be quick or the Seawolves would be there in 10 minutes and they would pay dearly. So I'd like to salute you, sir, for your service. Y'all are truly some of the heroes of my youth.
Well, thank you very much. Welcome home, brother.
Thank you. Welcome home to you.
I'll sign off. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Yeah, the Seawolves, Task Force 116 was divided in 4 divisions. The SEALs, who are very effective in Nam, the true wild men of that era, in my mind, were the SEALs. We used to tell them they were crazy to get off the boat. They would tell us we were crazy to go down the river in the boat because they could hear us. So it was sort of a funny thing. And then the Naval Air, which was the Seawolves and the Black Ponies, which, again, were our heroes. They came to our aid time and time again. The 3rd division, of course, was the riverboat sailors of the small boat PBRs. And the 4th was the support guys, the NSA and the guys on the LST. But all 4 of those units were attached to 116 and are all my brothers.
So there was a lot of, well, there was obviously several people with different functions, and but you all worked together and apparently and relied on each other. When you got in trouble, for example, you'd want that last caller to be coming to your aid, right?
Well, absolutely. The Army, as everybody knows, was heavily committed, and the Delta IV Corps was made up of all rivers and canals, and there was no major military bases. So then it was pretty much a Navy show with the 9th and the 199th and the 25th supporting us. But we had hundreds of boats. We had 300 PBRs and 200 heavies, 500 boats going up and down the river fighting battles, and again, 2 boats and small battle firefights do not make the papers, so the Navy story was never properly told. We won our part of the war, not to say the other guys didn't, but with the Navy, Zumwalt, our commander, many years later, informed us that we accomplished all our missions and pacified the Delta. And I think we proved it in 70 when we attacked Nek Long in Cambodia. By 70, all the Viet Cong battalions were in Cambodian sanctuaries, and they would come across, hit us, and go back. And of course, being an American, as you know, you're held to high standards. We could not fight the same way the enemy can fight. They can break the rules, and we couldn't fire until fire upon in some situations. And I can't tell you what that's like, but I'm sure you, being a police officer, understand that very well.
It's had to be handcuffed virtually on some bad situations. Ralph, before we took the call, we're into a little bit of the research and about your most recent book. And I wanted to talk about research because it was enough research involved with river rats, but it was your own story, so you knew a lot of it from personal experience. But when you got into your most recent book, you had to get, I'm sure, a lot more research. You were writing about other people and what other people's experiences were. And what was that like, and how tough was it to contact who you needed to contact and get the information you needed to get?
Well, first off, I went for help. I had Tom Glickman, who served 40 years in the Navy and was at the Joint Chiefs of Staff in 63, 64, and I had him, and I had Sam and Bach Eaton. Sam was one of my translators in Vietnam, a 16-year-old girl. And after 3 years, her and my shipmate Sam Eaton married. They live in Saigon, so they always give me the Vietnamese point of view. But as I say, I tracked down Bill Reynolds and Blackie and 40 guys. And that's the only way I felt I could be accurate, was to involve these men. Now, Tom and I also do a little walk through history in the beginning of the book, and we did a lot of research, and it's very important, especially in military history, to dig into the old declassified war records, and then if you can find somebody that was actually there in the battle, then that's icing on the cake, because now you're getting a point of view from somebody that was there, and records, no matter how good they are, never totally accurate. You know, they're written by somebody and back at the main firebase that wasn't really there but was reporting what he was told. But anyway, that was the key for me, the research. And again, and not to boast, but I've gotten all 5-star reviews, and many of the men are saying the same thing, that they felt that the research was good and accurate, and that I was very close on most of these. I've told people that River Rats was 70% accurate and 30% sea stories, and don't ask me which is which. Because I'm trusting guys that are using memories from a war 40 years ago, and it's just impossible to get every little thing, date, time, you know, who was on the boat that day, all that sort of. But again, we made an honest effort and tried to come as close. And if there's any question, I'll say rumor was, or scuttlebutt was. The second book, as you say, was much bigger, much more difficult. I almost felt like I was sticking my neck out and somebody was going to come chop it off. But fortunately, it hasn't happened yet. But exactly. You know as well as I do, when you start putting things on paper that other people can read, you're opening yourself up to get hit, you know. So far, it's been nice. All the letters have been wonderful, and people have been very complimentary. So I'm very blessed, but I'm still tiptoeing around cautiously. There is room in a foxhole or comfort in a foxhole. So if anybody does come at me and say this is wrong or that wrong, I can point to the man that gave me the story and say, well, go talk to the general because this is what he remembered or something. So I do rest on these guys. They're there. They're still my buddies. The part that was amazing to me was the families. General Bullock said when he got the book, his wife grabbed it out of his hands, read it, and said, excellent, we need 9 more copies for all the kids. Then he sent me that email, and I said, General, you could not have given me a better compliment than what you just said, because I wrote this to your kids. I don't feel qualified to tell the general about Vietnam. He's telling me, and I'm putting it on paper and trying to express what these gentlemen, and again, I was a little E4, 19 years old, so I champion the little guys. I like the little infantrymen, riflemen, the little sailors that were seamen in E4. But again, I do respect our commanders, and the Navy, you know, E6 was huge. A petty officer was, you know, they ran the show.
Sure.
The officers were busy with other things, you know. But when they got out on the river, it was a chief or an E5 and even an E4. I was a boat captain. I had my own crew. I was 20 years old making these life or death decisions that could affect everybody, you know. And I'm so happy that, you know, we all made it. So that was huge for me. Just to come home was huge. That was a victory.
Absolutely. Normally, I get into the publishing aspect a little bit, but because the time is going by so quick here, I would like to address, with a couple of minutes we got left, your marketing and promotion efforts. Now, you certainly have a targeted audience. And what have you done in the way of marketing and promotion to get your name and your book out there?
Well, you know, I went with Author House. They're very easy to look up, authorhouse.com. And Anthony Schrock was my man, and he guided me along. The marketing is really up to the author, and that's the toughest part, in my opinion. I've cornered my market to veteran groups. So, for instance, I'll be in Melbourne, Florida, April 22nd for 4 days for a Vietnam reunion. It'll be 30,000. Game Wardens and I will be there with a booth. I'll be signing, selling. I also will be at Sea Fair in Seattle the first week of August for 3 days on the pier with our PBR. Anybody can come down and meet me, and I'll sign a book to them. I will go to the MRF, Mobile Riverine Force Reunion, and I'm in Norfolk in July the 16th for the Game Wardens Reunion, which will be at the same time the SEALs are having their reunion. My buddy Larry Bissonette from Game Wardens has sold a great deal of books and promoted me. I'll be at the SeaWolf Reunion. I'm their guest speaker in Nashville in late August. I'll be in Texas at San Antonio in the November Veterans Day Parade. I'll be doing a signing there. So I'm really cornering. I'm going after the veteran groups, the men that actually served. And like the Mobile Riverine Force alone has 4,000 members. So, I mean, if half of those show up and I sell 100 books, then I'm happy. You know,
absolutely.
So that's the way I'm doing it, you know, but I'm sure there's many different techniques and that you have to go corner your own market and find out where you fit best.
You mentioned that, and I certainly agree, that the author, especially when you're a first-time or new authors without the name recognition, are almost exclusively responsible for the promotion. And obviously you are heavily involved. I mean, your schedule not only doing anything local, but with the travel you're having to do in the different areas you're visiting to appear, to speak, and to promote your book. You're really active, and I think that's what an author has to be if you want to get the book out there and the name out there.
Absolutely. You have to take that on. And again, being a professional musician for 30 years, I have very thick skin. I handle rejection well. and you will be rejected. Trying to get a bookstore to carry your book can be tough. They special order, but going out to these different venues and finding your market, and like you say, I probably spend more money promoting these books than I'm actually making. But again, this is a task that I need to do. It's a way of returning the honor to my friends and shipmates and So to me, this is a lifelong goal.
Well, Ralph, our time is up already.
Log Talk Radio.
Before I let you go, I'd like to thank you for being on, certainly with me today, and as we discussed before the show started, if any of your colleagues who have written books would like to be a guest on the program, certainly feel free to give them my email information, and they can contact me, and I'll be happy to work with them to set up a date and time that they could be a guest. And thank you again for your service, and thank you for being here with me this morning.
Thank you, Denny. I appreciate it.
Okay, take care, Ralph, and I'll be seeing you at the Warrior meeting pretty soon.
Okay, buddy. Be good.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Ralph Christopher. Again, two books regarding the Vietnam War, River Rats and Duty, Honor, Sacrifice. And the next Meet the Author program will be this Sunday, March 30th, which is an odd date for me, and it's going to be at 2:30 p.m. Pacific time. And the guest will be Sue Schroeder, and she's going to tell her story of growing up in Korea during the Japanese occupation and then through the communist regime and so forth. A very entertaining story and a very entertaining author. So I hope you can join me then. Thank you very much, and in the meantime, have a good day.